This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
We are delighted to be joined by Dr. Habib Olaka, the Chief Executive Officer of the Kenya Bankers Association. Before I continue with this, let me just mention that plug into the virtual platform and you can share your questions as we progress. At the tail end of this, I shall be sampling them and we get responses from Dr. Habib Olaka. To kick this off, let me invite Dr. Habib to make his introductory thoughts, after which we shall get into a question and answer session. Dr. Habib.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think it's really exciting to see us back on this, my chat with the CEO. The last time I was on this chat, I think must have been quite some time back. So I'm really excited to be back here. This is a conversation that we started some times back, almost 12 years ago, where we thought that through this, my chat with the bank CEO, members of the public can have the benefit of hearing it straight from, so to speak, the horse's mouth. And that's a CEO touching on specific topics that are of interest to the bank public. Now, this year we have widened that, and it's now a regional CEO chat where we are getting participants from our partners across the East African region. So I've had the other CEOs from the Bankers Association also joining us. To this extent, I would like to really extend my appreciation to the CEOs who are coming on board. You have got the Uganda Executive Director for Uganda Bank Association. That's Wilfred Owor, who has already had a chance to speak to us. We'll then have the CEO from Tanzania Bank Association CEO, who is Tuse Jun, will also come along, and then we also have the CEO from Rwanda Bank Association, that is Tony and Tore from Rwanda. Now, just maybe some brief background about KBA. KBA is umbrella body for essentially for the commercial banks in Kenya. I've got a membership of 46 financial institutions regulated by the central bank who are our members. Our original raison d'etre was really to champion the industrial relations between the member banks and the employees to ensure that there's a conducive industrial relations in the market. But subsequent to that, our mandate has since been widened to include things like industry development, ensuring that the banks are operating in a conducive manner, and also subsequent to that, you have had our mandate encompassing advocacy. And so our main focus since then has been on advocacy, where we engage the various political stakeholders to ensure that the policy environment within which the banks are operating is conducive for their role as much as possible. So with that, I think it's a fairly good summary of what KBA does here.
Thank you very much, Habib, and thank you for giving us some context around the business of the Kenya Bankers Association, and also mentioning that we did have a conversation on Friday. That was with the executive director of the Uganda Bankers Association. We are catching your comments online. We are working on a few of the teething issues you're raising, so just stick on with us. We shall be addressing that shortly. Let me just throw a question to Dr. Habib Olaka. When you talk about investment opportunities in the green space for households, for enterprises, first of all, someone watching might be wondering, what are these green investments we're talking about?
Yeah, an interesting question, because I think the issue of sustainability has become a key topic for discussion from all participants in the economy, so to speak. Yeah. I think the need for us to ensure that we leave this place a better place than we found it, and to ensure that our children and grandchildren have got as much opportunity as we do have today, runs across all sectors. And therefore, all of us are called upon to ensure that we are environmentally sensitive, and we are also socially sensitive. And therefore, as we carry on our economic activities, we ensure that we are concerned about the environmental concerns. We are concerned about the social concerns to ensure that the future generations have got as much a cleaner and sustainable environment as we do have today.
I see.
So we bequeath them what we were bequeathed.
Good points there, Dr. Habil. Many businesses I speak to will tell me that one of the challenges we have with green investments is that typically the upfront capital requirements are quite high and they are not able to source that sort of capital. What are your thoughts about that, and how does banking now come into that space?
Yeah, I think having talked about the need for actors in the economy to act sustainably and therefore be conscious about the environment and the social well-being of the population within which they work, the role of the financing arm is so critical in terms of enabling the players to be able to play their due role, because in order to achieve most of the economic activities, finance comes in to play a critical role. And therefore, if finance can also be used to shape behavior, then the more reason why we would be having an ecosystem that is working towards a common goal of achieving sustainability. And therefore, the role played by finance is so critical in terms of shaping that behavior. And that's why within the banking sector, we have had to put an effort through what we call the Sustainable Finance Initiative to ensure that the actions of the banks are aligned to the green agenda. And to achieve that, we have come up with a number of things. Like, for example, we came up with guiding principles that then align banks towards a set of norms, a set of behavior. We also lay up a level playing field so that all banks can be able to act in a given way, because the chain is as strong as the weakest link.
Sure.
And if we have got a weak link within the whole chain of the financial service provider, which is, in this case, we're just talking about the banks, that will cause a major break within the chain. And so ours was to ensure that we have got each of the players acting within some agreed principles. To put up the sustainable finance guiding principles, we then try to capacity build the member banks to ensure that they are able then to act along the lines of the guiding principles. And after that, we have seen really banks build their capacity. And we're now seeing the actual effects of having that. We have got, for example, a number of banks that have come up with products that are aligned to the green finance. Some of them through initiatives by the KBO, some of them picking up from the SFI initiative and beginning to build on their own. But for us, I think the critical thing is to ensure that all players are aligned to the green finance agenda.
Yes,
that whatever they do, they are aligned or conscious of the sustainability, not only of themselves, but also of the rest of the players in the ecosystem.
I see. And Dr. Abil, just checking on Twitter, one of the issues which has been raised here, which is a very good point, is that is there a more accessible pricing framework for those who engage in green investments by the banking sector?
Yeah, an interesting question. You see, ideally what should happen is that we should have incentives to encourage either investors into green financing instruments or the actual players in terms of the borrowers who can then be able to get some better priced green finance products that then will align their behavior, or rather get them incentivized towards green finance rather than, for lack of a better word, brown finance. Now, the market is still developing. So we'll find that, for example, even if you were to go to the market to raise a green bond, there are some specific investors who are looking for those specific instruments, and they're willing to forego part of their return in order to support the development of that market.
Yes.
You might find that the subscription for a green bond, for example, would be oversubscribed partly because of that, because there's a huge development in terms of investors who are looking for those specific instruments. And so you might find that at the moment, because of that element of subsidy, you might find that the green bonds or the blue bonds, for that matter, depending on which one, or any of the other bonds, may be coming in at a price that is a little bit lower than the ordinary, you know, bonds. The other day we had an instrument that was issued by some group of funds to a player in the market. That's Safaricom.
Yes.
The sustainability linked loan that was offered to Safaricom. They haven't disclosed the pricing, but my suspicion was that the pricing was significantly deeply discounted. To what you'd be able to get around. So, and I think that's a very positive development in the market. And it was actually four banks, members of KBA, who actually put together that structure.
Yeah.
And those are just some of the effects of our SFI initiative, where member banks who have been supported through this process that can come up together and actually structure something that is spearheading the agenda of greening the economy.
I see. Habil, before I jump into my next question, let me just remind those who are plugging in that you can engage on Twitter, or now called X. The hashtag is CEOChat. I'm just checking through the comments. I'll be picking your questions as you fill them, and we'll be happy to throw them to Dr. Habil Olaka, who's with us. Dr. Habil, you've spoken about green bonds, and I must remind you that it's been 5 years since Kenya launched the green bond framework. And skeptics always ask, why is it that 5 years down the line, only one issuance is in the market?
I guess it's a fair criticism. I think without being defensive, the time when we launched the Kenya Green Bond Program, one of the very first outputs, so to speak, was the support given to Econ Holdings.
Yes.
Going ahead to raise the first green bond in the market.
Cross listed on the London Stock Exchange very successfully. But then, you may say that how come after that you've not had specific, you know. But I think also we need to look at it from the perspective of the fact that the market, subsequently to that, was fairly volatile. We had the COVID challenge. And in a market that is volatile, coming up with an instrument like a green bond on the market can be fairly challenging. And therefore, we need to let the market settle down. Because you go to the market at that point in time, the price that may be demanded from the market may be such that it doesn't then make sense.
Yeah.
So you might as well have to give it time, time it to the point whereby the market has settled back, and then you can go back to it. And in fact, there were a number of options that were coming up then. There were a number of options where some specific banks were actually considering going singly into the market to raise a green bond. There was a proposal of the fact that for the smaller banks, they can actually come into a vehicle that can be triggered by KBA and help a number of banks to come together and have a single issue into the market. The other one was to support clients of banks who are in the green space, who may singly, for example, go and issue a green bond. And the likes of KenGen and the likes of Floated, including Safaricom and the rest, were floated as possible candidates for issuing the market. Then the fourth one was a sovereign green bond.
Yes.
A sovereign green bond had been under discussion for a bit of time, but again, the issue is the time, because you don't want to go to the market at a time when the market is inappropriate. And, you know, so that is slightly put off. But the other day when I was talking to somebody from Treasury, it looks like the market is now beginning to look up.
Yeah.
And at the appropriate time, it was good then to start that conversation. So our Kenya Green Bond program, it's really doing a lot of groundwork in terms of preparing the players and supporting them, giving them necessary tools to be able to be ready for the launch, for going to the market when they are ready. But I think one lesson that for me comes from this is the power of partnership. The Green Bond program would not have been possible without us really going launch to get partners into this framework, with the likes of the Climate Board Initiative, the likes of FMO, the likes of Aero Securities Exchange, the likes of FSG Africa, who together at TBA have formed such a strong partnership arrangement whereby we combine with various entities to be able to support the market in a given, be it in terms of disclosure, be it in terms of reporting, be it in terms of just the actual running around on the ground to bear oneself for a particular issue. I think those are the strengths of partnership in my view.
Okay. Yeah. Many are asking, how can households participate in this green investment initiatives?
Yeah, I think one of the critical things to put in place there is the power of pooling. Because you see, if you go to the market, for example, and you access a green bond, supposing you're a financial who will access the green bond, the green bond will have to be a sizable issue for it to make sense. So you then issue this in the market, and it was going to be sizable if it makes sense, even in a commercial sense. But then on the other hand, the borrowers have going to then, you're going to pull together a number of borrowers, because you either directly use this funding for a specific select projects, which normally would have been identified even before you go to the market to raise the issue, or you create a very significant pool of possible borrowers and then direct this funding to that. So the critical thing is that the financial thing will have had to pull this together or aggregate it together. But I think, in my view, green finance is the way to go on for most of these players, including SMEs.
Yes, because a number of SMEs are actually already in the green space. The only thing is that we have not had the capacity to be able to evaluate them and pick out those who are absolutely green and those who just need a little bit fine-tuning for the brownness to be removed for it to remain fully green from the rest. And then those can actually then be channeled directly in the green financing, where they can now be able to access the available global funding that will direct it towards green products.
Okay. And what are some of the sectors that easily lend themselves to these opportunities in green finance?
Actually, we had a study that we've done some times back, and just focused on three specific sectors that we saw had a significant opportunity in terms of real projects. The first one was manufacturing, because manufacturing has brought and is a significant contributor to our GDP basket, so to speak. And so ensuring that, and also it can be quite a contributor to the environmental damage if not managed well. And therefore, manufacturing needs to be ensure that their environmental impact is addressed. Their social impact in terms of employment creation and all that is also addressed. So I think manufacturing is a key one, even in terms of the efficiencies, in terms of production, in terms of their reliance on energy, on power. And in Kenya, we are lucky to have a grid that is almost like fully, green.
Yeah.
A significant proportion of it. And so the energy efficiency becomes critical, which then contributes to the overall sustainability agenda. The next one that I can think of is transport. Transport is fairly wide. If you look at transportation, if you look at their consumption of dirty fuel, so to speak, and if they can, for example, convert most of their consumption of dirty fuel that has got an environmental carbon footprint that is damaging, and move that, for example, into the electric vehicle alternatives, and quite a number of them. So there are a number of areas within the transport sector that you can think in terms of converting them from where they are into the green space. Then finally, agriculture. I think agriculture is so critical. It's a significant proportion of our GDP, in terms of employment creation, it's quite significant in terms of actually the occupation of most of the rural folks compared to the urban equivalent. So it's a significant area that if we can focus on in terms of greening, I think that would be something quite significant in terms of pushing forward.
Okay. Washira Ndege is asking, is there a gold standard to rating of ESG in sustainable finance, or are companies just using their own criteria to determine this?
Yeah, I think there are a number of developments that are coming up. And you know, when a new area is coming up like that and is picking up quite a bit of relevance, the other players coming, like, for example, regulation starts picking up, standard setting entities start picking up. So, for example, in terms of financial reporting, I think that's where you were going towards.
Yeah.
IFRS, which is the International Financial Reporting Standards, have actually come up with two standards,
S1
and S2, that are specifically trying to ensure that the entities are reporting in a way that is comparable across the various players. And therefore, standardization becomes critical for the players to be able to have a common framework to unit their reporting. And so standard setting will pick up from there. So far, we have got two standards. I'm sure as the matter develops and as more issues come up, they'll continue either refining or issuing more standards will go along. Now, on a local scene, if you look at, for example, and because we're talking about banks, I can also give some reflection on what banks are going through. You see, banks, for example, the central bank came up with a guidance on risk management. Now, those guidance notes required them to disclose,
yes, and put in place risk mitigating frameworks to ensure that, and also the fact that this has going to be taken up board level and then coming down. So that's where central bank wants it to be placed. Now with that, they then have the reporting requirements to central bank in terms of what they're doing. Now that reporting has going to be standardized on the template or something. So what KBA will need is that we then help the banks come up with that template. Is aligned to the task force for climate related financial disclosures template, and I'm sure they are bound to be other regulators that will also try to align their respective industries along the line of sustainability and financial reporting. Because disclosure in some of these developments is essentially,
yes,
if you disclose, it means that therefore you're committing yourself to something that somebody, the public, can measure you against going forward, and so transparency becomes great involved.
Okay, there's a question here. Do banks have a threshold in terms of how much they should lend to green investments, at least in the medium term? Essentially, this guy is asking, do you have like a target you have set for members that by 2030, at least this proportion of your loan book should be green?
No, we haven't gone to the point of being prescriptive. Problem with being prescriptive is that it then becomes a lands issue rather than you are the way of doing things.
Yeah.
What we wanted to achieve is that let it be the bank's DNA to do the right thing.
Yeah.
They did the back DNA to ensure that you minimize the amount of environmental damage that the projects you're funding actually do. Let it also be the DNA fact that the project they're funding should have the social well-being of the people around that project taken into consideration. Now, when you put targets, when you put some prescriptive measures, the mentality of the players becomes that I have to comply. So it's not even the issue, it's only what is seen by the public that you will be, or what's reported, that then the bank will be trying to ensure that it is aligned to the prescription. So you find that if you put, like, say, 30, people are just doing the bare minimum print with 30%.
Yes.
Whereas if you left it open, you're not going to have some, you know, riding all the way up to 50, 60, some of them fighting for the 100% rather than just being on the minimum. And then you can't put a very high minimum because then it becomes discouraging, especially for those who are still far from meeting your threshold. Therefore, it makes sense to leave it as it is. But as you move on and as people get onto the bandwagon, maybe then the issue of the threshold becomes critical, because if you find that there are some laggards who will never make the effort because it's voluntary, sometimes it helps to, you know, take us deeper.
And nicer.
Yeah.
I see. Let me ask this question, which is being, I've seen two such questions, and I know you responded to this earlier, but is there a green discount being extended by banks, and not just for large players like Safaricom, which has been mentioned, for ordinary people like ourselves?
Well, the thing would be that at the end of the day, you do what they call risk assessment of the facility. Now, if you are in the green space, chances are that your risk profile would be much better than somebody who is not in it. Because if you're looking at it in terms of the future, you've got a much more sustainable future than somebody else who's in the brown space, for example. So from that perspective, you're already earning a discount by virtue of the fact that you're actually in the green space compared to somebody who is not in the green space. So to answer the question, yes, there is. So because the ESG is being looked at as a risk that is being incorporated into the overall risk assessment of the product.
Oh, I see. Someone is mentioning that Dr. Habib spoke about manufacturing, transport, and agriculture. I think food and beverage has a huge opportunity. Any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Food and beverage, of course, it's, I was just mentioning the fact that there are a few, but even linking it to agriculture, there is agro-processing.
Yeah.
And I think once you start talking into getting into agro-processing, we're actually talking about food and beverage. So I think the spaces in which we can be able to see opportunities for us to be responsive in terms of ESG practices, it's wider. It's left to our imagination in terms of where we can have the most impact, depending on where we are, to where we can have the least impact. So we really focus on areas that can have the maximum impact in terms of our overall, our role in terms of sustainability.
Okay. Is Dr. Habib Olaka really optimistic about incentives in an environment where we can see the government scaling back on the same? Fair question.
You know, yes, I totally agree with that. You know, we were hosting as a nation some 2-3 weeks ago, the African Climate Summit. And out of that African Climate Summit, there was a declaration, fairly bold declarations, you know, from both the summit and the private sector. And we were really committing ourselves to ensuring that we walk that path. You know, but you're also asking others to give us space to be able to walk our path. And I think for the bankers who are really aligned to the private sector declaration, I think we are committed to play our part in terms of trying to deliver on those commitments. So for banks, I think we're going to ensure that we remain true to our commitment of the fact that you're going to move towards the green space to ensure that the banking sector itself remains sustainable and supporting the rest of the ton of victims.
Okay. There are three questions here during time on the same thing, and it's about awareness and the knowledge base among MSMEs when it comes to green investments. First of all, they might not be sure what green investments are. What can be done to bridge this knowledge gap?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. One of the biggest challenges that SMEs have is capacity building. In fact, just the whole idea about de-risking them is around the need for capacity building. Now, one of the areas that we support an e-learning platform that tries to provide capacity to these SMEs, and we have got both sort of a hybrid, what we call online and the face-to-face sessions that are normally held in partnership with the banks, because banks are the ones that have got access to their customers. Now, for this program, we have got specific modules that are supporting these MSMEs in their capacity, and it's modular. So, depending on new things that come up, we keep adding modules onto the platform, bring up new things. And there has been quite a bit of bias towards the green economy. And therefore, trying to bring the MSMEs into this discussion about the need to be on the green side of history rather than remain on the brown side, so to speak. So the essence of this is to ensure that we are bringing them, making them alert to the various areas in which they can actually be contributors to the journey towards green economy, rather than being the polluters.
Yes. Yes. There is a question being asked around whether KBA is acting around green finance in isolation, or are you partnering with other players in the financing ecosystem? I believe that must be having the SACCOs MFIs in mind.
Absolutely. We as I mentioned earlier, this is a journey that you can't go alone. Partnerships are so, so critical. And partnerships is because you bring in the various forces, the various capabilities, because you would not be having all the capabilities in yourself, be it financial, be it technical, be it human. And also the need to bring in the other sectors, so to speak. So we already have engagement on the likes of Innovation of Chamber of Commerce and Industry, where we using their access to their specific membership, we are then able to use the Inuka Enterprise Development Program to reach as many of them as possible.
Yeah.
We've got partnership with the likes of Kenya Association of Manufacturers. Kenya Association of Manufacturers, because they have got memberships that have got, for example, the MSMEs who are in the respective areas of manufacturing. And we have got a program that is targeting the capacity build, those very specific MSMEs. And so through this partnership, we are able to get our program after accessing their members. And so in terms of exploring the various other partnerships that we are able to develop, we are now in the process of trying to get onto the county governments. So the county governments have got significant access
yes.
to players within the ecosystem. May not be quite right at the center where KBA is in terms of Nairobi Road, but through those, you are able then to reach as many of the people within the counties as
possible. Okay. Dr. Habil, this question, I think, it sounds like it's for either ESPAC or the Central Bank of Kenya, but because you had spoken earlier to me, let's just take it on there. IFRS S1 and S2 are launched on September 5th in this country. When do we expect banks to begin reporting in line with this?
Yeah, interesting. You see, because of the fact that banks, like any other player within the financial reporting system, are obliged to report according to the set standards. So it's not just banks alone. I mean, it's all players will then have to, once the IFRS comes up with
yes.
the standard, then it has got a commencement date. And from that commencement date, the auditors, the accountants will then have to ensure that your reporting is aligned to the standard that's already in place. Because otherwise, then they will not be able to certify your accounts that you are aligned to the IFRS standards, unless if you're actually compliant. So to answer the question, it's not just banks. I think it's all players, once the standard has been put in place, all players would like to actually report as per the standard and in the effect from the effective date and the standard is put in place.
Okay. Interesting question coming in here. A lot of the buildings we see coming in our urban centers are unplanned and not eco-friendly. How can banks, which basically finances construction, play a bigger role in ensuring that this very important sector turns the corner?
So, yeah, a number of areas, actually. You know, one of the things with the fact that as bankers, that's why we came up with this sustainable finance initiative, so that we can have all the banks aligned to a particular code of conduct, so to speak. It's actually the particular guiding principles. Now, one of the principal tenets of this principle is the fact that you will not depart from the principles. You know, for you to be effective in an initiative like this one, where you're trying to enforce something, and where people can take advantage for competitive reasons. So if a player goes to a particular financier, and the financier tells him that, you know, for me to be able to finance this project, you need to put in this game this year, which are mitigating measures against the ESG requirements that you're having. That means that the project investor will then have got to put additional funding into the project to achieve that. Now, the easier thing is if you went to the next financial, the financial tells that, by the way, here you can get funding without necessarily going through that.
Yeah.
You really create an uneven playing field within the structure. And so one of the things we had to do was to ensure that we got a level playing field for everybody. So it doesn't matter which financial you go to, the requirements will be the same. That you need to put mitigating measures in place to address any environmental or social risks that are emanating from the project that you're funding. So back to your question. As long as the banks are aligned to this common expectation of the fact that they are not going to find some of the products that have got negative effects of either the environment or the social well-being of the citizenry, then we'll have all players acting the same, and therefore if you're going to be made financial or if you're going to be required to put some additional measures in place to address them to be across the board, that would be much more effective than having other players acting differently. Now, and this is where the need for a strong regulation comes in, because if you have, for example, other segments of the market, say the certain not observing the same, and therefore these developers find it easier to go through the circles and through the banks are acting in a given way.
I see. So tell me, Dr. Habina, speaking about strong regulation, somebody writes in here, greening the economy in a vastly informal economy. How do we go about that?
I think regulations should normally come in as a way of enforcing something that is possibly injurious to the people who are consumers of the service. And if it is significantly so, then the more reason why you should have strong regulation to curb that that abuse or misuse. But I think the critical thing, first of all, is to ensure that there is rather than a compliance kind of thing, that's when regulations come in. You actually have behavior being incentivized in a particular direction. So you can actually use incentives rather than regulation to achieve quite a bit of it. So if, for example, you gave these players some incentives towards going for green finance, rather than using the stick approach, to have that behavior, I think you're found to be much, much more effective. Incentives play a significant attractive, it's almost like a magnet towards people's behavior rather than a stick approach, where somebody is bound to always be checking whether you are not seeing, and when you're not seeing, he does something, you know. So you then have got to incur a lot more in terms of the capacity you would regulate and supervise the players. Because they don't have an incentive to act in a given way. It's only a stick that is actually pushing them towards a given way. And they'll always be waiting for who blinks first.
Yes.
The moment the regulator blinks, they'll do whatever they want. It's when you come in and you must put the resources around to be able to police them, they'll be observing you and trying to pretend to be following their regulations.
I see. Back to where we started, and a question is being asked here about the cost involved in green investments are quite expensive, and this person is being asked specifically about e-mobility. Is there anything that the KBA thinks can be done at a policy level to address this? I know you've already touched on incentives, but maybe just be able for them.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that it's true. For if you're looking at, for example, the e-mobility, there is quite a bit that, for example, banks can be able to come in, because you need to get that early adoption kind of support. And the other day I was attending a function by one of the banks that were launching their sustainability commitments. And one of the things we saw there was the fact that they actually had supported somebody who already has got a fleet of electric vehicle buses that are already beginning to fly within, within Nairobi. And not only that, but you also have to provide charging stations within within the system. And incidentally, the charging is such that it's done at an hour where there is hardly any movements overnight.
Yeah.
You charge overnight when there is when there's hardly any movement. By that time, electricity actually can be made to be cheaper.
Yes.
To because you're using it at a time when the demand for electricity is not as low, so you can actually off the gas. Yeah, so you can actually have it done. And I think if banks came up with such kind of support programs that actually support the early adopters, because the critical thing is for us to get enough critical mass for it to become almost like a movement. And we start seeing the effect, because it is by adoption that you start seeing some of the prices of things like, for example, the batteries and all that come down, because it is going to be produced in mass, and then the innovation being directed in that direction to try to bring some of the price down. And it's then that it will become affordable, and it becomes now a way of life rather than picking on a diesel engine. You're going to pick on an electric vehicle engine, because you don't have to be worried about where you're going to charge your the vehicle, and then to the price of charging that vehicle. Because if it's
too expensive, then it doesn't make sense. And you not have people incentivized to go in that direction. But though it has got positive benefits to the environment, but people don't go there because it doesn't make economic sense.
I see. Habil, as we get to the close of this, there's a question here being asked. Has KBA explored options for co-funding with those entities which provide patient capital because of the capital requirements for this kind of engagements, and what is the progress on that front?
You know, partnerships in terms of funding is a critical element. However, the critical thing is the fact that for example, you mentioned about patient capital. We have got this approach towards blended finance,
yes,
which is sort of like a mixture of, you know,
commercial
and concessional. You can have a mixture of equity
and debt,
biased towards debt, biased and a mixture. So depending on the needs of the investor, you can be able to get the combination that best suits you. And therefore, the good thing about that is the fact that sometimes we get into the markets. What's available is debt from the banks. But that's not the kind of financing that you actually need. You probably need a more patient capital, source of capital. And by having this kind of blended arrangement, the borrower then can come in and pick on the one that best suits their needs from the mix of financing available.
Okay. Fantastic there. As we dial down, I'm just checking to see whether we have any fresh questions here on my Twitter handle. So far, it looks like there was none. Maybe just to throw this one at you, and we had touched on this. At a regional level, how do you see this landscape in terms of the uptake of this green investment opportunities?
Yeah, I think one is that in Kenya, we are making some significant strides towards creating that enabling environment. So, like, for example, we talked about the Kenya Green Bond Program, where we're trying to prepare the markets in terms of market analysis, in terms of capacity building, in terms of identifying the investment opportunities and all that. But this was via the Kenya Green Bond Program. And depending on the lessons learned from the Kenya Green Bond Program, there is no reason why that cannot be scaled up to reach the rest of the ESC market. That's Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, and
and Burundi, and even towards the new members who have since joined. And no wonder this particular CEO chat, we are now making it a regional CEO chat,
yes.
Bringing the other association CEOs to be part of the conversation. The next step now would be to try to, because this CEO chat was not really meant to be the association CEOs.
Yes.
It's meant to be the banking sector CEOs. So the next step now would be to try to capture the regional, the CEOs of banks in the region to become part of this significant conversation. And through that, then we are able to get as much participation across the region as possible. You might even find now country-specific versions,
yes,
of this conversation, depending on the unique requirements of each of the markets. I mean, I'm trying to imagine that, for example, maybe in Burundi, we may have to consider the language and come up with a French version of.
Yeah.
Of it, depending on how we find it, because even though in Burundi English is spoken, the Swahili is spoken, but you might find that actually French is probably more widely used,
yes,
than the other.
And I'm sure in that case of French, you are very able to steer that conversation, Dr. Habib.
Well, we'll see.
Dr. Habib, let's close our conversation. Let me invite you to make your closing remarks. And before you give your closing remarks, there seems to be a lot of skepticism around this issue of lending, especially to small and medium-sized businesses, because someone is asking here, imagine if Safaricom had to get a syndicated facility from four banks. Who can take on the kind of risk some of us will be bringing on board? I'd imagine for Safaricom, it's the ticket size they were asking for, but let's respond to that.
You know, it's interesting because, you see, in the Safaricom discussion, I was there for the launch of the sustainability report, and the panel discussion with the four CEOs, part of the discussion with the CFO of Safaricom. I think one thing that struck me that came out of this conversation was the fact that the money was not the problem. Each one of them was saying that money was not the problem. And I think we tend to think that usually the stumbling block is there, it's access to the money. The money was not the problem. In fact, the CFO of Safaricom said that if we had access to more than four times what they asked for, because he was looking for 5 billion. For it to have been four times, it means that it was in excess of 20 billion available on the table, and we took what we can, and we left the rest on the table. So it means that actually the money, access to the money is not a problem. I think the problem normally is being able to structure your vision and exactly what you want to achieve in a way that the financial can buy in. And now that's normally where the problem lies. Most of these SMEs, for example, don't have the capacity to be able to structure the thing in a way that it's bankable. So at the end of the day, looking at it bankable. Once it's bankable, even the conversation I was hearing on the last week, money would not be the problem.
Yes.
Once it's well structured, as it's made bankable. So I think, just to answer the question, I think the SMEs, they should not be worried about the fact that they pose a risk to the market to the point whereby the money is not available. I think once you realize your risk exposures, and then you de-risk them, because then you get, and that's why we put, for example, the likes of the Inuka program, which then tries to de-risk the SMEs. And once those areas are addressed, money will come flowing. Money looks for opportunities, and as long as the probability that the money goes and it's got a high likelihood chance of coming back, I will not look at the numbers. But if there is a high chance that once the money is released, it may never come back, then I grow confident.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for some safeguard to ensure that my money will eventually come back. For this is total money. This is shareholder's money.
Yeah.
All
right. And now, Dr. Habib, we have 2 minutes. Your closing thoughts.
Yeah, I think for me, it's an exciting moment for us to be having this conversation, and especially given that we started at the Kenya level, we have seen the CEO chat progressing what it is to be, and now we are thinking of scaling it up to make it a regional conversation. And it's very exciting that actually we started quite successfully on this regional conversation, And the way it's picking up in terms of investment, in terms of interest, even the messages that I saw pass on the head on last week on with our colleague in Uganda, I think we are going to see much more innovation into this space. I'm sure the next set of regional CEO chat may have a completely different character, having taken into impact that you're going to receive from this innovation. We just want to keep pushing it to the next level until our dream is to have an Africa way to innovation.
And we certainly look forward to that. Dr. Abilo Laka, thank you so much for creating time to speak to us this morning on the subject of green investment opportunities in East Africa for enterprises and households. We thank you so much for plugging in, and we do apologize. We realize we've had a bit of a technical hitch from the audio standpoint today, but nonetheless, this has been recorded and I believe will be made available on social media platforms for you to be able to just dial back in and shoot questions to KBA, to other associations, to be able to keep this conversation going forward. We shall continue with this conversation, so stay tuned for the next one. Thank you so much.